Hello. I'm just going to jump in and go through my synopsis, unless you had anything you wanted to add before we started.
No, I'm ready to get going.
Okay, so this is the synopsis for Eddard 6. Okay, so in the last chapter, we were all the way north. We were at the wall with John and his friends, but we are back in King's Landing.
The excitement is happening.
I know. The upcoming tourney, which would be the Hands Tournament, is providing to be quite a pain in the arse for Ned, okay? So many travelers are coming into town for the tourney, which means like a huge influx in crime. So Ned increases the city watch, even lending some of his own men to the leader of the city watch, which is our good friend from later on in the show, Sir Jano Slynt. So he gives up some of his own men from his own guard to pitch in with all of the... Yeah, some feedback coming here.
Can you hear him? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Sorry, my grandma came in. Sorry.
Oh, you're okay. Right. Hi, grandma. So Ned even offers up some of his own men to join the city watch during this big carnival that's coming to town. Because obviously what Sir Jano Slynt has in place is not adequate. So next thing, from his prior investigation, Ned learns that John Arryn and Stannis had been spending a lot of time together before John's untimely death. They were visiting brothels and visiting an armorer. He doesn't know why John was interested in this book that he found, The Lineages and Histories of the Great Houses of the Seven Kingdoms. Like, it's a boring book. It's a boring book. And basically Ned wishes that John had used a bookmark, you know, so he could see what he was reading. Ned goes to visit the armorer, and his name is Tobo Mott, to see what John and Stannis were so interested in. There he finds a young, sexy apprentice named Gendry Waters, who is clearly Robert's bastard son. So that's basically...
Oh, Gendry.
I know. Hey, we told Harrison it was going to get crazy up in here. We're going to have girls' night.
That's right. Especially with that picture he posted on the discussion
question. I know, right? Okay.
The first is strong.
So one thing I wanted to pick out was exactly what was going on crime-wise in King's Landing. Because... like, it sounds pretty dang serious, okay? So this is a quote from the book. It says, "Last night we had a drowning, a tavern riot, 3 knife fights, a rape, 2 fires, robberies beyond count, a drunken horse race, and the night before a woman's head was found in the Great Sept." I like how they tagged that onto the end.
Yeah.
I thought they tagged on and they're like, oh yeah, and a woman's head.
And a woman's head, you know. Yeah.
So, like, things are like off the chain up in King's Landing right now. And it's funny because Renly is supposed to be master of laws. Like, that's supposed to be his seat on the council and his job in King's Landing. And like what's he doing? Like, what is Sir Jano Slynt doing? I just thought it was interesting that instead of disempowering Jano Slynt, like, you know, as we know from the show, like, Tyrion comes in pretty quickly and, like, fires him. He's like, you're a piece of crap. You get out of here. But instead of, like reprimanding Janos and being like, hey, this kind of is reflective on your poor leadership, he instead weakens his own guard and, like, offers up a bunch of his own men to compensate for Janos's poor planning, poor execution of leadership. Like, I don't get that move on Ned's part. What do you think?
I don't really get it either. The only thing I could think of is because Ned has already so frustrated with the situation in King's Landing to begin with that he's just like, listen, we're not going to mess around. I'm not going to try and fix you. Just take my guards, get it done and over with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think he was trying to be like a selfless leader and probably even like, maybe he's so worried about the money situation that maybe he's like, listen, like these guys are already paid for, like just use them, like just handle it. I think he's just trying to like brush it under the rug, but it'll be like, okay, I helped. Like, even if it's to my own disadvantage, I did something.
Right. And of course, I mean, his northerners are better than any of those city watch people. So,
I mean, you know. One Jory Cassell has to be worth like a dozen Kingsguard.
Yes.
So that was, I think it was a noble effort on Ned's part, but was probably not a smart move in the end because, Like, why did it get out? I mean, they had to have known that, like,
this that was gonna happen. Crime
was going to... I mean, when the carnival comes to your town, your right. town is probably going to beef up on security, and, like policemen are going to be paid overtime and stuff because they know that people are going to be drunk and there's going to be a lot of strangers mm-hmm. in town and people are going to be out late. Like, a town would typically, like, prepare in advance for something like a tournament coming to town, but apparently they're just like, oh, we'll just keep doing our normal thing every day and see what happens.
Well, I know too, because it's, you know, it wasn't too long ago that they had Prince Joffrey's name day tournament, so it's not like these only come around once every 15 years and
it sounds like Robert looks for any excuse he can to party and spend money, so like they should be used to it by now.
Not Bobby B.
Oh, Bobby. Oh man, I miss that guy. Okay, so I want to talk about something else really quick. Something that Harrison asked in the questions. He asked, why did Renly feel the need to show Ned a picture of Margaery and ask him or point out, like, don't you think that Margaery Tyrell has a likeness to your late sister, Lyanna Stark? So Harrison's question was, why do you think he did that? I don't really want to call this a theory because I feel like it's just kind of common knowledge now, even though mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. I don't know that it's ever, like, verified. I think it's just kind of a known thing. Like, it is known. So did you, before I get into the theory and explaining it, did you have any thoughts?
So I took to the internet for this one because I was like, I have no clue. The only thing I could actually think of was because Renly has his persuasions with Laurel, mm-hmm. that he did it as a way to be like, well, I need to marry somebody. And Robert is probably, you know, I'm sure the Baratheons are like pushing Renly to get married. He can't be a bachelor forever. So I was like, maybe Robert like suggested her because she maybe looked like Lyanna until Ned was like, nope, she doesn't look like Lyanna. So then I was like, I have no clue. So then I took to the internet and was reading about how Renly was like plotting with the Tyrells to like get Margaery, have Robert put Cersei aside. So then I was like, well, I can kind of see that, but I don't know. I'd like to hear what you have to say about
okay.
it.
So here's how it went down historically. So the Tyrells were Targaryen supporters and sympathizers. Mm-hmm. Through Robert's rebellion. So when Robert took the throne and, you know, the Targaryen dynasty was whatever we're calling it, no more.
Yeah, no more.
Renly, or the Baratheons rather, took Loras Tyrell as a ward or as a to help him with his armor and his horses. A squire.
A squire.
Okay. Because in the books, Loras is the third youngest son. So he has two older brothers and Margaery are in the mix. So he's the baby of the Tyrell lineage. So he's not heir to the Tyrell name. So he is taken, kind of like Theon is a ward of Ned's. He is taken into Baratheon custody as a kind of like a prisoner. Or a ransom to kind of keep the Tyrells in check and let them know that, listen, like, you are submissive to the king. You know, you are known Targaryen supporters, but now you have a new king and we have your son. Mm-hmm. But what they didn't account for was for Renly and Loras to fall in love. And so Renly has vested interest in the Tyrell family and he wants to stay with Loras. His best way to do that is to bring the Tyrells into the fold, into the royal family. And so Renly has a conspiracy of his own. So basically throughout the books, we understand that both Renly and Stannis are totally on to this whole Cersei's kids are not Robert's thing. Like, I don't know if either of them it's ever, like, pointed out, but the fact that Stannis was on this goose chase with Jon Arryn shows that that Stannis knew what was up. But Renly has his own idea, too, that he needs the Lannisters out of the picture, and he needs to bring the Tyrells into the picture. And so the thought is that he shows Ned this picture because he's like, I'm going to get my brother Robert to marry Margaery, and then she'll be the queen, and the Tyrells and the Baratheons will be best friends forever. So he's like, he knows that his brother has a sick obsession, like an abnormal obsession with Lyanna Stark. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, if I can get people to start chattering about how Margaery Tyrell reminds them of Lyanna, it'll be an easy sell, because then he'll be able to say, you know, well, I have an idea for your new bride, after he follows through with this Lannister conspiracy that he's working on. It's like three different people are working on getting the Lannisters out, at least three that we know of. And so then all these rumors would have already started, and it would be an easy sell. But even Ned thinks, man, she looks like Lyanna. That didn't really work out the way he planned.
Right.
But that's the idea. And I don't know if I explained it very well, but basically is that Renly is a Tyrell sympathizer. He wants to bring them into the fold, secure them with the royal family, and his idea is to marry Margaery to Robert.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. The other note I had on it that I said was, I had thought at the very first, going back to my whole very first theory when I read it about Robert, like, pushing Renly to get married or mm-hmm. something. I thought that, because in the show, and I don't think they say it in the books, I didn't read ahead or anything, but Robert says that he's getting so that he can't remember what Lyanna looks like. So I thought maybe he was, like, getting forgetful and was like, oh, yeah, Margaery looks like Lyanna. You should marry her. She's beautiful. You know what I mean? So
that's really good, too, because if he had enough people, even if it was like someone he paid, to be like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, she sure does or something.
Right.
You're right. Like, because Robert has like a psychotic obsession. It's not just mm-hmm. like, he's like, oh, it's a girl I used to love. Like, he's unnaturally obsessed with Lyanna Stark. Mm-hmm. And so if he's starting to panic, like, oh my gosh, I can't even remember what she looks like, then yeah, getting at least one other person on your side to vouch for, like, oh, she totally looks like Lyanna, then that could be, whether it's for Renly to marry her or for Robert to marry her, like, that's like an easy end, because he has a sentimental spot there.
Yes.
Okay, so next question was, who paid for Gendry's apprenticeship and why? What do you think?
Oh, so at first I had no idea. The only thing I could think of was Stannis, because otherwise why would he mm-hmm. be traveling around with Jon Arryn and, you know, leading him to all these places? He must have some sort of inn. So I took to the internet again. And everybody...
Reddit is a scary place.
Oh, yes, it is. It's that rabbit hole. Everybody, and I guess it's kind of not necessarily straight out confirmed, but basically it says it in subtext that it was Varys, mm-hmm. that he came in disguise because he, in the books, he's trying to get Aegon Targaryen back onto the throne. In the shows, mm-hmm. it's Dany. But that he hid Robert's bastard away because it's just another pawn for him to use to, you know, create chaos on the throne and weaken the Lannister terms. Oh, there I go again. This darn phone.
Right.
I can't keep it upright. Weaken the Lannister's power and then put the Targaryens back on the throne.
Right. And my thought was, of course, I think it's basically confirmed later in the books, because he said that Varys says that he had made arrangements for all of Robert's bastards except for one. And it was the baby that was killed in the brothel.
Yeah.
I know, because he didn't think that they would kill a baby. Like, basically, right. He was like, oh, she's still a baby. I have some time to figure that out. Or, like, it's just not, like, the top of my priority list right now. And I can't remember which book it's in, but Varys does say that he made arrangements for, took care of all of Robert's bastards.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And again, it could be that Robert just asked him to. It could be that, you know, Stannis or Renly was like, hey, we better keep an eye on these bastards, because I think his brothers probably were pretty, you know, like, observant to what was going on.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
But, and again, I feel like Varys likes to have options. Like, mm-hmm. his goal in the books, like you said, was to put Aegon Targaryen back on the throne, or on the throne. In the show, it was Dany. But I think no matter what, his greatest interest is truly always the good of the realm. And so I think
too.
He just wanted to babysit his prospects, to be like, hey, what if, you know, what if I follow through with this whole Targaryen lineage thing and it's a bad idea? Or,
right.
you know, because he already knows that every time the Targaryens have a kid, it's a flip of a coin. So mm-hmm. maybe he's just saying, like, maybe I got to keep this Gendry kid, you know, on hand. And Because no matter what, I need to have some options. Like maybe this Targaryen thing won't work out.
At least I'll have a plan B or something.
A Baratheon on hand.
I also noticed too, I went back when we first meet Varys, he's wearing purple silks and the cloak of the Lord that visits and drops Gendry off is purple. So I was like, interesting.
And I don't remember what book it's in, but there's another time when Varys disguises himself and wears a similar disguise. Like he wears like a beard wig. Is it called a beard wig? I don't know. Fake beard.
Sure.
So anyway, I just really thought this chapter was pretty juicy and full of like politics and intrigue and a lot of literal cloak and dagger. I love the armorer. What was his name? I wrote it down.
Like
Tobo Mox.
Mm-hmm.
He was just like, oh, I can make you the best armor ever. I can make you a helmet that'll scare children. And that's why would I want a helmet that'll scare children?
Ned is getting, I like the intelligence we're seeing, starting to see from Ned, like he's really piecing things together, he's also getting so damn sassy, like he is just done with everything.
He's like, he like literally does not have time for any of this. Like I mentioned him like constantly having like a cluster headache.
Yeah. And just going like this all the time. Like,
I just need a nap. And poor Ned. So much pressure.
It is.
Okay. Do you have anything else? I have a feeling we're going to go a lot faster.
I know. Without Harrison. I'm trying to see if I wrote down anything else.
Yes.
So I thought it was interesting that when he's on his way to the armor, he noticed that, like, you know, there's people lining the alleyways and stuff that he's going down to see the armor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's worried about Varys' spies, but he's not worried about Cersei's spies, and he's not worried about Littlefinger's spies.
Yeah, I think he's, like, racist against Varys.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
He's always had that prejudice against him. Like, he obviously makes him very uncomfortable. So, that is interesting that, like, that's top of mind for him. But the other people who obviously have spies, have their own agendas, don't want him there, he's not, like, actively thinking about them.
Yeah, because really, I mean, Catelyn, at least, is focused on the Lannisters, so you think he'd be worried about Cersei's spies just as much as Varys's, and he's like, nope.
Yeah. Especially with our next chapter. I just don't feel like Ned and Catelyn are really on the same page.
I don't think so either. I think that's all I had on this
chapter. I think so, too. I thought it was a good chapter. I really liked reading it. But I would say of our three chapters, I have the least amount to say about it.
Oh, see, next chapter I have the least amount to say.
No, I think you're right. I think next chapter I probably have the least amount to say. But it was such a good chapter.
Oh,
but
it was.
But yeah, you go ahead. You have the synopsis for that one, right?
Okay, yeah. Yep. So let me... All right, we're on to Catelyn 5... 4. 4, excuse me. If I can't get this phone to stay up. All right. So, Catelyn and Sir Roderick ride for Winterfell, and they decide to stop at the inn at the crossroads. They enter, rent a room, and sit down for their dinner. A singer named Mary Leon comes to chat when, lo and behold, Tyrion Lannister walks into the inn sporting a gold coin for anyone to give up their room. Tyrion notices Catelyn and calls to her. Catelyn stands and begins to speak to the other men in the room, reminding them of who they are sworn to, House Tully, and command them to seize Tyrion so that she can bring him to Winterfell and tried for conspiracy to murder Bran. Dun. Dun dun.
That wraps it up like that. So let's remind ourselves that there was a chapter a few weeks ago. I can't remember if it was a Catelyn chapter or a Ned chapter, where Littlefinger takes Ned to meet with Catelyn in his brothel.
Mm-hmm.
And Catelyn fills him in on everything that's been going on in Winterfell. Ned fills her in on everything that's been going on in King's Landing. And they come up with a very specific plan about what they're going to do.
Yep.
And he gives her some very specific instructions on what she needs to do for her end of the plan and for this whole thing to work.
And it just poofs.
And then she just does something completely different. And not just something completely different, but something that's like bold AF.
Yeah.
Like, she just citizen arrested the queen's brother.
With no proof, basically. With, like,
no proof. The word of a known liar as her evidence. Peter Baelish's story, he told her. And basically just being, like, a scorned mother on, like, a rampage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and... yeah, she completely... yeah, it's just, like, she... kind of like how we saw Rob in his chapters, like he got so emotional after a while. She just, like, logic went out the window and she was like all emotion, all mama bear, and took Tyrion, which was one of the biggest mistakes.
And Tyrion, I mean, honestly, I talk about every week these moments where you're like, if only that hadn't happened, how different would the story be? But this is probably the biggest moment, I think.
Yeah.
Because this is what sets everything off with, you know, the Starks being enemy number one of basically, I mean, I say the Lannisters, but really, I mean, of the kingdom, because, you know, the Lannisters technically have Robert behind them and everything else just falls, you know, it sets everything political and everything south of the wall basically in motion. I mean, literally everything bad that happens.
Yeah, what could have taken years to set up has now been blown up and is all happening, like, right now. Yep. So, as much as this chapter was, like, there wasn't too much, like, critical information of it, it was such an important chapter to the story itself.
Right, so there's not, like, all kinds of, like, little, like, hidden things or, you know, amazing quotes. But, like, this chapter right here, this is a pivot moment where we, we're going one way all of a sudden. We're like, woo, now we're going this way. And that's not good. One thing I did think was really cool and fun to read was one of the reasons I love Game of Thrones so much, and I love this book series so much, is because I think is the first fantasy world that I ever just got totally enthralled in. I'm talking continents, countries, lords, bannermen, languages, gods, like the world building in Game of Thrones is unparalleled. It's amazing. The languages. And this is one of the first chapters. Yeah, I think this is probably one of the first chapters where you really get to learn about the Tullys and their bannermen, and you get to see sigils and house colors, and you kind of learn a little bit about Catelyn's history. And that's one of my favorite parts of being so obsessed with this show, is remembering that, you know, like, you can quiz me that, like, so-and-so is a bannerman for so-and-so, like, and they live, you know, on the east side of the river. You know, like, that kind of stuff is just so fun to me, all the maps and the history and the alliances and the, I just freaking love all that. And this is one of the first chapters where you really get to, like, envision, like, all those bannermen surrounding her. And it kind of shows you what the politics are like, because, so in the olden days, it was actually six kingdoms, and they were actual kingdoms. So they were blocked off, and they were kings, and then they had their, you know, their lords and ladies that represented their kingdom. And when Aegon the Conqueror took over, he basically said, like, I'm going to leave you be. Like, we're going to throw in a new area called the Crown Lands, you know, King's Landing. That's your seventh. And I'm going to kind of leave you be. You still get, you don't get to be called king anymore, but you get to still rule over your lands. So these guys, the Tullys, the Starks, the Baratheons, even though the Baratheons are kind of a newer house. But these are old names. These are names of people who used to be kings. And I love getting to kind of see that play out. And it kind of makes sense in this chapter. So, like, all she has to do is say the word. Like, I'm Catelyn Tully of River Run, and get him.
Right, because it's not, like, she had been explaining in the beginning of the chapter, you know, what was his name? Who rode right by her. And she knew him from way back when, but he didn't know her. You know, and it's just, like, that you don't have to know her. She's a Tully. You know, she's declaring herself.
And the thing
Tully
is, if he was just riding down the road, she may not have noticed him either. But she saw his sigil and his banner and his colors. And so if obviously if she had been walking down the road with a big Stark flag, then they would have looked at her too. But you're right. Like, she immediately, it's like she's able to, like, scan the room and being like, I'm surrounded by allies. I'm surrounded by people who would fight for me and my father, because, you know, it is their duty and their pleasure to do so. Right. So I thought, like, that was cool.
Yeah, yeah, it is cool because, again, one of those little things, had it been different, the whole story would have been different, because if the hands tournament hadn't been going on, all of these people wouldn't have filled up the inn, she wouldn't have been surrounded by allies, and I don't think she would have taken Tyrion, even if they did meet.
No, I don't think she could have, because if she had been surrounded by strangers, or, you know, some other random knights that weren't from, I mean, in that area, she's going to be, like they pointed out, she's going to be familiar with everyone, because she's got the Vale, which is her sister's territory, and then she has the River Run, which is her family, her father's territory, and then past that is all Winterfell. It's all north. So once she gets to that point of the crossroads, she's going to be surrounded by people who are, in a sense, loyal to her family's, no matter what, but it's just going to be strangers if people aren't traveling. It's just going to be regular old guys. I did think it was interesting, though, that before Tyrion even showed up, she has that moment where she's looking out the window and she sees where the crossroads are going. And she's already thinking of, like, other ways she can do it.
I know.
Like, she talks herself out of it, but, like, she's like, I know what Ned told me to do, but I could go west or I could go east. And I'm like, no, you go north.
That's
north.
The plan.
And she's like, yeah, it would be nice to see my dad. It would be cool to go hang out with my sister, but, you know, probably get killed by a wild animal. What was the animal she was scared of?
Mountain lion? What did it say? Yeah, it was a mountain lion with the mountain clans. Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I better not. And I'm like, why are you all? She's just, like, looking for a reason to do something bad.
I was looking for trouble.
Yeah, so Tyrion walks in and she's like, bingo.
That worked. Didn't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. So, yeah, I enjoyed the chapter. I really liked learning about some of Hoster Tully's bannermen. I love the line where she said, what does she say about the sound it made when, like, 12 people pulled their swords out of sheath at once?
The very last sentence. She did not know what was more satisfying, the sound of a dozen swords drawn as one, or the look on Tyrion Lannister's face. And let me tell you, I think I probably had the same look.
I know. I was like, that is a cool line.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my kids just busted in here all at once.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, they're like, help me brush my teeth. And I'm like, go find your dad.
So the discussion question, which we basically already hit on, was Catelyn justified in capturing Tyrion? No.
No. I mean, no way.
She even said herself, you know, she, I wrote it up here. She said it specifically. She, meaning Lyza, might have the very proof that Ned needed to bring the Lannisters to ruin. So she knew she didn't have the proof that she needed, and she went and did it anyways.
Yeah, that's just like, it's just not a smart move, because no matter what your gut tells you, no matter what, you know, like, circumstantial evidence you have gathered, like, that is just too bold of a move to make with not only no evidence, but no backing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ned told her, go get an army ready. like call the bannermen, like, prepare archers. Like, he literally was like, there's probably going to be a war, but we're going to need to be, like, they're going to have the element of surprise, like, they and the element of waiting for everyone to come to them. Like, oh my gosh. Like, let's not do this.
She put the cart before the horse a little bit there, I would
say. A lot. And guess who got his head chopped off for it?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Not necessarily for it, but it really expedited the events that led up to it.
It all led from there.
I'm sure Ned's like, I was kind of hoping to be not in King's Landing when they found out about this.
Probably. What else do I have written on here? I only had like 5 little bullet points on this. I just said that, like, you could tell that Catelyn's emotions took over. And because at one point she says, and may he choke on it, Catelyn thought, but it was Bran she saw choking, drowning in his own blood. So you could just tell that she was getting into that mama bear protective mode, and there was nothing that you could do to convince her otherwise.
Well, and grief is, like, grief is such an incredible thing. Like, you don't, I mean, it takes over you. So, like, that's mm-hmm. the benefit of doubt that I try to give her, is that, like, she is grieving because her entire, like, everything she knows just fell apart right in front of her over the last couple months. Mm-hmm. And some people grieve, you know, in different ways. And we've seen her grieve in some stages. And right now she's going through that step of grief called kidnap Tyrion Lannister. Everyone knows step four in grief is kidnapping the imp.
Yeah, also
Harrison's here. Hey, Harrison.
The only other thing I said on here was LOL, Sir Roderick and his misking whiskers. That's my favorite part of the whole thing.
It's like when people lose a limb and they have like phantom pains and stuff, he has like his mm-hmm. phantom whiskers.
Yeah. Or like I had glasses for the longest time and I got contacts for my wedding and that was 3 months ago and I still push my glasses up on my face all the time. I'm like,
you know what? I do that too. So I almost always wear glasses, but when I don't have them on, I like instinctually, I'm constantly pushing them up.
Mm-hmm.
Funny. And all right. Do we have anything else to say?
So damn stupid. That was my last one.
Catelyn. Why you gotta do that? Why you gotta be like that? It's not good.
That was all I had for that one.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wonder how many chapters there will be from here on out where I continue to say, oh, man, if only that hadn't happened. But this is, I think this is the biggie. This is the biggie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so far at least, that this is the, like you said, the pivot point. The mm-hmm. story was traveling one way, and now it's going to go in a different direction.
I know, and it just makes me sick because Ned's just clueless back in King's Landing about what's about to happen.
He's trying so damn hard. He's reading boring books. He's going to the armor.
Like in the show, like Jamie approaches him in the courtyard, and he's like, excuse me? What? Like blindsided. Oh, man. And then Tyrion, how blindsided must he be? He's never heard this story before. He has no idea. And so he's like, I did what now?
Yeah. Aww, he's poor pretty Tyrion. Proud of himself. He paid for a room. He got somebody to get kicked, you know.
No, he's just on like this epic adventure. He's just been to the wall and back. Like he's living large. And next thing you know, he's, like I said, citizen's arrest.
Poor Tyrion.
Are you ready for Sansa 2?
I'm ready for Sansa 2. This is my favorite chapter.
I know. I really liked it. I love this episode, too.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
These scenes in whatever episode it is. Okay, so this is the first day of the Hand's Tourney. And since it's through Sansa's POV, we get to see all the pageantry and romance that comes with it. And I think that's why you and I like it so much, because it's so fun. Yes. Many major and minor characters are introduced or mentioned, but we meet for the first time Sir Gregor Clegane, the mountain who rides. He kills a young knight, who at this point we don't know who it is, but we find out next chapter. Mm-hmm. And Sansa effectively feels nothing when she sees him killed. A beautiful young knight, Sir Loras Tyrell, gives Sansa a red rose. At the feast, a drunk King Robbo yells at Cersei and says that he will fight with his warhammer the next day. Later, Sandor Clegane, I can never say that, Sandor Clegane, Prince Joffrey's dog, escorts Sansa back to the castle and tells her about how he had his face burnt off for playing with his brother's toy. So, that is my synopsis. So, let's talk about the tourney.
Yay! All right. So this was by far my favorite chapter to read so far because of all the colors and all the people and like mm-hmm. the sights and the smells and the sounds.
It's like you can smell the kettle corn. The funnel cakes.
It was just, it is because it was from Sansa's point of view. I think it was just that much more colorful because, mm-hmm. you know, Grimm, he always
She's like the heart eye emoji right now. Yeah. Like this is everything she's been waiting for. She's like, well, this is what it's like.
And I had made in the very beginning, it says they talking about the silks on the litter that they traveled to the tourney in, mm-hmm. It says they turn the whole world gold. And you can just tell, like, she is just mesmerized by the glitz and glamour of this tournament and King's Landing. And she's so blinded to everything else that's going on. So I thought that was interesting. But, yeah, I love this chapter. I like that we got to see the Hound, and he's a little bit more complicated than just being an asshole all the time, to put it neatly.
I'm glad that they showed us this chapter through Sansa's point of view, because – so many people are grouchy about this. Like, Sir Roger, I know. Like, oh, that's stupid. And Ned's like, that's so stupid. So I'm glad that we got it through someone's point of view who was, like, genuinely excited to be there.
Yeah, appreciated it. Yeah.
Let me think of what I wrote down. Okay, so one of Harrison's questions was, what do you think about Joffrey and Sansa's relationship at this time?
It is starting to turn so toxic. Like, the red flags are there, girl. Turn around. Like,
run. You do not need this man in your life, girl.
You know, when somebody pays her attention to her, or it benefits Joffrey's reputation, he is right there to woo her and to make her feel happy and everything. And then when it doesn't benefit him anymore, or he's bored, or something happens, she's dirt to him. He wants nothing more to do with her. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, girl. Like,
he's a textbook manipulator.
Oh, yes.
I know. And I feel like she still has hope, you know?
I do, too.
I think she obviously was pretty shook up and had her eyes opened when everything went south at the Trident, and Lady got murdered for it, and Micah got murdered for it, and, like, essentially, like, ruined her relationship, whatever she had of a relationship with her sister, and she really got to see Joffrey's true colors. Okay, so I think she's obviously now like, oh crap, like, this may not be everything I thought it was going to be, but I think she's still kind of trying to be like, but you know what, like, I can make the best out of it. Like, maybe that was, you know, maybe that wasn't how it's going to be forever. Maybe I can still, you know.
Yeah, you see, that's, I feel like she's still naive to the situation, because, like, it talks about how at first she wanted to hate Joffrey for the situation. Then she was like, oh, well, it's not really his fault. It's Cersei's and Arya's fault. Cersei's fault,
yep.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, girl, you're just, like, making excuses for him.
What thing is, it really is, he did a pretty good job of writing someone who has that victim mentality too, because that's what an abuser will do, is they will make you think that maybe you're the crazy one. Like, maybe I imagined how bad it was. You know, it's not his fault. He has a terrible mother. And so that's what abusers do, is they twist it to make you feel like maybe I did something wrong, or maybe it's not his fault, or maybe it won't always be this way. So, that's kind of sad.
I know. I will say, this point of view chapter for Sansa, I feel like, made me dislike her more than her first one. Simply because she seemed kind of shallower in this one. Like, she forgot about Jane. Like, Jane got so upset after.
She's like,
yeah. Jane
my
got
friend.
So upset after,
well,
that,
and
nice
she should
guy.
Be. Like, Jane should have been upset by that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he
died right in front of them.
Literally got a, what's it called? Like, a lance. Or, what's it called? The jousting. Yeah. What's it called? Why can't I think of words today? I have no words today.
It's a lance, isn't it?
Is it a lance? Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, because he says that Gregor's lance goes where Gregor wants it to go. Like, that is like, I mean, I know that it's a brutal sport, and, like, she probably expected to see blood that day, but, like, still, like, you saw a lance go through a dude's neck.
And they made a point to say it happened right in front of him, and all of his blood spilled out onto the ground, and it was a terrible thing. And she, like, you know, Jane was super upset, and Sansa was just like, oh, well, I didn't know him, so.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, too, that the one remark, like, she's like, they're not even going to sing any songs about him. So, like, that's something that's important to her, is, like, being famous in the end, or being remembered, or being, you know, because in her mind still, like, that's all she cares about right now, is being queen.
Right.
And so she's like, well, you know, he was basically a nobody, so.
Oh, well, yeah.
And I come, she's like, if it were my dad, I might care. And I think it's kind of interesting, because that's, like, the first time, and maybe one of the only times we ever see true emotion out of her, is when her dad is on the line and her dad gets killed. So maybe that's some foreshadowing because she was like, you know, maybe if it were my dad, I'd care, or Jory, but
I didn't catch that. That's
I don't even know this dude.
Yeah. And I just like, she forgot, it says specifically, like, she forgot about Septa Mordane seated to her left when they were drinking the wine after the tournament at the feast. And it's just like, I feel like you're so shallow. And like, when she was talking about how she couldn't hate Joffrey.
Hold on, my dog wants out of this room, but keep talking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so she was talking about how she didn't want to hate Joffrey that night because he looked so beautiful. And it's like, oh, the
girl.
Yes, stop letting the silks from the litter turn everything gold. Like, look at the real picture.
And it kind of makes you wonder, too, like, going back on that victim mentality thing, if she is starting to kind of, like, harden her outer shell to kind of prepare herself for the life that she knows she's probably going to have to leave with Joffrey. And again, not trying to justify her actions, because I do think she's acting kind of like a little bitch right now. But maybe she's trying to just like make it easier to not feel emotions and sadness and pain and stuff, because she realizes that with Cersei and Joffrey being a huge part of her life from here on out, that like she's, you know, she's going to have to learn how to not wear her emotions on her sleeve.
Yeah, I said that. I said that, you know, this is one of the first times she's, like, detaching her emotions from the situation. And that's basically what she learns to do to make it through, you know, through King's Landing and Cersei and Joffrey and through Ramsay Bolton and everything else down the line. She learns to detach her emotions from the situation and just try to be cunning about things just to survive. So I feel like this is the very first time that we're starting to see that. And it does show that she is smart in a way, you know, to detach herself from the situation. It doesn't maybe say
if
much
that's
for
what
her
she's
character.
Indeed doing.
Right. It doesn't show much for her character, but it does show that if that's what she's doing, it's a, you know, beginning of her cunning, I guess.
She's in it for the long haul. Okay, let's see. So his next question was, what does Sandor's story tell us about this world? And I will say that I wrote down, good God, like that is sad.
That was
and
a terrible story.
Terrifying. Like it really reminds you that like I think we got used to it being dark because we saw it visually, but the books are even darker and more, I mean, this genre, a subgenre of fantasy is called grimdark. And it is, I mean, it's brutal. Like there are some brutal scenes in these chapters, and this is one of them. That like, if you didn't cringe when you read this, if you could sit there and like eat a sandwich while you're reading this, and, like, like I don't know if we can be friends, but like it seriously, like he has a exposed bone on his face. Like he was 6 years old or 5 years old, I can't remember, and his brother held his face in the fire.
And then his dad lied about it to everyone.
And his dad, yes. And then his brother became an anointed knight just a few years later. Like, that's just a heartbreaking story. And it does help you have some understanding for the Hound. You know, maybe it doesn't make him like, oh, well, then never mind. Like, no wonder he's a jerk. Not like that. Because you still make your own choices in life. You still get to decide how you... you know, how you react to things, but it does explain, it doesn't justify his actions, but it does explain them, I would say.
Yeah, it definitely...
That's a massive trauma to go through, and it's also, like, why would he ever trust anyone again? Like, his family betrayed him in, like, the worst way.
Yeah, I said that, I know, I said it shows, you know, a lot about family life, because his dad went and covered up the fact that his older brother held his head to the fire over a toy that he didn't even want to play with. Like, it meant nothing to him.
Evil.
And it's just the fact that, just the fact that Sandor had it and he didn't want him to have it. But I also said that you can definitely understand why Sandor does not want to be called a knight. He wants nothing to do with any of that, because his brother...
My dog wants back in.
His brother, who, you know, almost killed him, he could have very well killed him, because they said it took three men to pull Gregor off of him. And so now he's just, because his father lied about it, he's becoming this knight, and he's supposed to look like a hero and everything else to the realm. And And I feel like it reinforces the idea that Grimm plays with, that just because he's a knight doesn't mean that he's a good hero. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean he's a good person.
And then I'm trying to find where it is, but Sansa is like, oh, well, he's not a typical knight. And then the Hound's kind of like, sure, if that's what you want to think, then that's fine. Because the truth is that, like, we find out later that a lot of these knights are, like, super not nice guys. Like, Sir Meryn Trant. Or even Janos Slynt. You know, like, these guys are not good guys. Like, you don't have to be a good person to be an anointed knight. But in her mind, you know, she's going off of, like, fairy tales and stories. And then, to top it all off, she's seen, like, beautiful knights, like Jaime Lannister and Ser Loras Tyrell and Barristan Selmy, you know, like, these icons. And so in her mind, she's like, well, that can't be typical because, I mean, a knight is such a revered and honored position that surely you'd have to be a man of honor to be a knight. And you can tell the Hound is just like, okay, kid, if that's what you want to think, that's fine. But he knows that's not true. So, yeah, it definitely explains why he has, like, he's, like, super racist against knights.
can you blame him? But
No, I can't, because that is brutal. I also wrote down, I thought this was funny, like, I think of the tournament, it's like the All-Star game, or the home run derby, or the slam dunk contest or something. It's like, it's just a time for people to like show up and show off their skills. And I think it's supposed to be like a fair or a carnival, and like all this stuff is going on, and like these guys are showing off their skills and they're representing their houses, and it's violent and stuff, but it's just, you know, it's all for entertainment purposes. It's not the real deal. It's not a war. It's not showing, you know, when it came down to it, who would really win in a fight necessarily.
Right.
But it's all glitz and glamour. And it kind of goes to show, like, why some people are all about it. And some people are like, this is just a huge waste of time. Just like some people are like, if you're a big fan of the NBA, like, and you're really, really, really into it, and you're all about, like, championships and rings and legacy and all this, like, those people don't even tune into the slam dunk contest, because they're like, that's a waste of time. Like, my favorite player could get injured just to show off. Like, it's not even cool. And like, that's why I'm like, I think this is kind of like the same thing, where it's like, it's just a chance to show off and, like, you know, be acknowledged, but really it doesn't matter, because maybe you should be, like, saving your skills and saving your body for, like, the stuff that does matter, because winter is coming.
Because I'm
and a war,
right? Just a war, just a little one,
just a war.
I don't know if they'll say it in the books, but in the show, or no, they would have said it already in the beginning at Winterfell. Jamie and Ned are talking, and they're kind of like having a macho man contest, you know what I mean? And Ned's like, well, I don't like to show off my skills before I meet a man in combat,
right?
You know what
he's
I mean?
Like, I like to leave a little bit of mystery, so when I chop his head off, he's surprised. And it just kind of makes me feel like it's something that like a silly man would enjoy, there is significant winnings to take place, so obviously, like, you know,
yeah, it doesn't hurt to be good at this stuff.
Yeah, the mountains is like making a lot of money this weekend. So I understand why he wants to do it. But, my mom said, in a chance for the nobility to be seen and adored or hated by the common folk. That's true. Like, stuff like this is good for the economy. Like, they mentioned that in Eddard's chapter from last week. That, like, stuff like this stimulates the economy. And it was really good for the noblemen to get out amongst their people and be seen and to mingle, to be seen by the lower class, but to mingle and brush shoulders. It was, I mean, think about how big Westeros was. Like, this is a time for them to come together and actually play politics and be brush shoulders with the high and mighty. So,
it kind of explains that too. Like, when Renly gets on horse and they think he like cracked his head open or something, but it was just one of the tines on his helm.
Yeah.
And then he throws it into the crowd and they all start like freaking out and trying to get it. And then he has to go over and calm the crowd. You know what I mean? It's almost like a concert.
Well, he's like a celebrity.
Something.
Yeah. He's like, the Backstreet Boys are coming to town. Sorry, I'm old.
I'm going to a Jonas Brothers concert soon. So don't even.
Girl. So Jonas Brothers are a little young for me, but I have a younger sister who is super into Jonas Brothers. So I love the Jonas Brothers by proxy. For sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited. I can't even take it.
You should be. Joe Bros. And also, maybe Sophie Turner will be backstage, and you will be in, like, the same building as Sophie Turner.
I would die.
I'm sure she'll be there. Like, they're super attached. You're going to be in the same building as Sansa Stark. OMG.
My heart's racing already.
You're like, oh, is it time to go yet? I'm so excited. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, do you have any other, like...
Well, I just thought, what do you think the reasoning was for cutting that end scene out of the show, effectively, and telling the Hound's story through Peter Baelish versus having Sandor walk her home like he does in the book?
I like
the book version way better.
Oh, I like the book
because
version way
the whole
better.
Time Peter's telling it, you don't know if it's true or not.
Right.
And there's no reason for him to lie about that, because the hatred between Gregor and Sandor is pretty obvious. So, like, I never really doubted it. But anytime something comes off of Peter's lips, you have to wonder, is it true?
Yeah, you have no
What's
idea.
His motive for saying it? I think he's just trying to, like, get in good with Sansa and, like, build some trust with her and, like, let her know that, like, there's scary people out there, but I'm not scary. Like, I think that's kind of his motive. But why do you think they switched it?
I almost just wonder if it's because, theory wise at least, everybody, you know, there's people out there who want Sansa and the Hound to get together, and I feel like the show was not about that life, and they just kind of didn't want that friendship to grow. Maybe, like, they really wanted the Hound to just be like this gruff, like, arrogant type, you know what I mean? I don't think they wanted to give him that story arc yet.
Right. And because at this point in the book, you don't really know who's going to be a significant character, like who's just a sideshow. And he does call her his little bird for the first time, which is cute because he actually references, I know, he ends up being such a gruff little
I know.
But yeah, about the birds from what country did he say where they trained the birds, though? So it's kind of funny because in the show, it's almost like it's a term of endearment. Like, oh, you're just so frail and beautiful, you're a little bird. But in the books, it's like, you're like a trained monkey, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, do you even think for yourself? You look so cute up there prancing around like a trained bird.
Yeah, and like a canary that just gets taught how to speak.
Right. And so it's kind of interesting perspective because in the show, I just took it as like, that's just a sweet, like, he has a soft spot for her, and that's like a pet name he gave her. But this gives you the perspective that it's kind of a dig at her for not having a mind of her own and doing whatever her septa says. And I'm trying to remember. It doesn't really matter. But yeah, he references some country where they train birds, apparently.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to look at it. Yeah, I don't know where it went.
I'm worried that all my pages are going to fall out of my book because it's so worn out.
I know, that's the only thing, because I don't have the books. I do it on my iPad and it makes it hard to go find things, but.
Well, you'll have to start. So I like going to like antique malls, like flea markets. And basically when I'm there, I just keep my eyes peeled for anything. Well, I like lots of different fantasy series, but I keep my eyes peeled for anything from, authors I like, but all of my books I've picked them up for like $2.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'll start keeping my eye open to get you a set because I'm like, I love, it's like a hobby. I love hunting for books. So, and I'm like out of bookshelf space. So
also,
it'll give me some purpose in life.
Yes. Thanks, girl.
No, yeah.
So, but going back to how they changed that scene in the show, Littlefinger in this chapter, gross. Like, he is so creepy. I
know.
Definitely like the show version of him better in this scene because he's gross in this chapter.
And he was pretty gross in the show too. Like,
oh, he was, but
he's
not...
like, oh, your mom is so pretty, or like, ew, she's ew. But also, we have to remember too, in the books, he's a lot younger, which
this
makes it a little less creepy because we know that like girls married young, and he was quite a bit, because I mean, and it says in the chapter he's introduced in, he's still in his 20s. Mm-hmm. So that makes it a little less creepy to me, but, I mean, only barely.
Yeah, no, because, like, he doesn't even, because at least in the show, like, he sat down and he talked to her and he explained, like, who people are and, like, stuff like that.
But yeah, he was like, oh, it's your first time, look in there, and that's so-and-so.
Yeah, but in the book, in this chapter, he, like, says that his mom, or her mom was his beautiful queen once, and, like, touches her hair, and touches her chin, and then, like,
probably smells
off,
it. He would.
Oh, man. But, yeah, I'm like, oh, Littlefinger, stop being so weird.
I will say, kind of back to the Sansa and Joffrey part, even though, like I said, she's kind of being a little bee this episode, and she's this chapter, and she's obviously delusional and still, like, self-serving, it did make my heart sink for her when he was like, oh, do you need an escort back to the castle? And at first she's like, no, and then she's like, oh, wait, say yes. Like, you know, oh, he's going to link arms with me, and he's going to walk me to the castle.
And now I get a good night kiss.
Yeah, and we're going to talk without, like, people listening to it. Like, you can tell all this is going through her head. And she's like, oh, actually, I do. And he's like, I'll send my hound with you. And, like, my heart sunk for her.
I know.
Like, so disappointing and embarrassing for her. And
I know. I know. It's like, you could feel the just, like, she's just like, oh, well, all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like well, I already agreed. So, yeah. and he's here because he just came out of a shadow. Oh, I have another question for you. Why do you think Loras Tyrell gave her a red rose?
I didn't know about that.
He was giving out white roses because, you know, he's super flamboyant, and also because, I mean, like, they're the Tyrells and they're roses, you know? So that makes sense, but, like, it's made a point to mention that, like, he was giving out white roses, but he gave Sansa a red rose. What do you think that's about? Because he knows that she's Joffrey's betrothed.
I didn't know if it was... I couldn't come up with anything good. The only thing I could really come up with is the simple fact that it was his last joust. So, like, and he changed the color to be like, this was the biggest victory, so this is the most beautiful flower that I'm giving to the most beautiful girl. Yeah. So I just thought it was
kind of risky, really, because when Rhaegar Targaryen gave Lyanna a rose, because Rhaegar was married and Lyanna was betrothed, but Loras is not married or betrothed, but Sansa is betrothed to the prince. So I thought that was kind of a bold move to single her out like that. But maybe not. Like you said, maybe it was just a gesture because it was the last, you know, the last big event.
Unless it was a way to, like, boost Joffrey's confidence, like, kind of get an in with the Lannisters, you know what I mean? So, like, you know, I'll come and compliment your bride because she's so beautiful and you guys made a great choice, and I'll kind of seem like an ally when really they've got that plot to get rid of them. Maybe that's it.
I wish Harrison was here. He'd have a great answer.
I know.
I didn't go to the Reddit forums on this one. Me neither.
I should have.
Because I'm like, because, you know, like, that it was the beginning of, like, a massive conflict. Sorry, my mom's asking me questions on text message. Okay. She's asking if I'm using a filter. I'm not using a filter, Mom. I'm just actually this beautiful, okay?
I'm a golden goddess.
No, it's I have a lamp right in front of me, and it's making this big glare on my face. That's all it is. I don't remember what I was saying.
Oh, about the rose.
Yeah. I don't remember what about the rose, but...
Yeah, you're right, though. There's got to be some significance to it, because it wasn't just that it was his last joust and he gave her a rose.
Or that
it was the sweetest victory.
When George wrote this, he didn't know where he was going with all these characters, so maybe he was setting something up that just never came to fruition. Because there are several instances in this book in particular where it's not plot holes or anything, but it's little things you can tell he built it in case he needed it, and then just never went that way.
Right, kind of like Varys' plan B.
Yes, and, like, Loras was in the show, I can't remember in the books, but I think it's the same in the books, but he was for a short time betrothed to Sansa, so maybe, you know, again, everyone has always come up with these conspiracies and plan Bs and everything, so maybe he was just kind of securing a plan B Because if Renly wanted to marry Margaery to the king, maybe he planned on then marrying Sansa, who would no longer have a prince, to Loras to kind of secure all the major players. I like that answer.
I do too.
That's the Harrison answer right there. All right, Harrison, you hear that? You don't like it? Show up next time.
That's right. No, just kidding. That's really all they have on that chapter. Yeah. I don't think I had anything else. I just thought it was interesting that, like, the Hound.
Oh, Jack just came in. He said, "Can I come in? I promise I won't be annoying."
Hi.
This is Jack.
Hi, Jack.
Or as we call him, Jack and Hagar.
I like it. I think it was just interesting that, like, the Hound, he wanted to scare Sansa. He, like, forced him to look at his face and its hideousness. And then wanted her to, like, almost feel bad for him by telling him the story, and then was like, but don't tell anyone or I'll kill
you.
It's like he needed to tell it.
Like, he needed a safe place to tell it. He knew that she'd be too scared to, like, go flap her mouth about it. Because, I mean, everyone needs to open up to somebody. And let's be real, it's probably, like, he doesn't have a lot of people to, like, talk to.
Yeah, so, especially when his father and the Lord went and lied to everybody about his heir, his older brother.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right.
That's a safe place to talk, for sure, because she's scared of him, so she's never going to say anything.
No.
That's his confidant.
The Little Bird and the Hound.
Aww.
It'd be such a good sitcom.
I know. I told my brother today, you know what would be another good sitcom that we'll never get to see? John Aaron and Stannis going around the city.
Yes!
They're like playing detective, going around the city, going into brothels, and like, no, we don't want a helmet. It's like a comedy. I see it.
Yep, me too. Yeah.
Like an Odd Couple sleuth.
Yeah.
Kind of comedy. I'd watch that. Stannis and John Aaron.
Oh, man.
The Stag and the Bird.
That would be good.
Yeah, I'd watch that for sure.
I feel like John Aaron is, like, kind of like a laid-back dude. Like, he seemed like a really chill guy. And then there's Stannis, who is just, like...
Yeah. All stick up his butt, yeah. But I like your shirt, by the way. I forgot to put on a Game of Thrones shirt today. I got Deadpool on today.
I'm going to order... This one came from Torrid. I'm going to order another one. It's a tank with, like, it's got cutouts here, and it says, "I drink and I know things."
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a drink and I know things, but it's so worn out now that I think I just need to replace it, because it's not like a cool shirt anymore. It's like a dusting rag now. My Mother of Dragons shirt is that way too. I cannot wear it in public. It's now just it looks black, but now it's like charcoal gray at best, and it's all cracked and everything. So I definitely need a new Mother of Dragons too. All right, well,
that's all we have.
So, you know what, we got done in an hour. That's awesome,
right? I know. Gosh, Harrison, why do you talk so much? No, just kidding.
Also, these weren't super heavy chapters that had tons of, like, depth. I mean, these are important chapters, and there's world building in these chapters, there is history in these chapters, there is major plot pivotal moments in these chapters, but there wasn't really anything that needs to be, like, dissected or anything, or
interpreted. Or,
right. There's no acid trip Bran in this. Let's see. What are we going to read next week? Let's look at that.
Yes. What are we going to read?
So there's an Eddard chapter next, and then
Eddard, and then
Tyrion. Unless I accidentally skipped one.
Nope, Tyrion and Arya chapter.
Ooh, I remember that chapter. That's a good one.
Yep, we're going to have some good ones next week.
Yes, exciting.
Yes.
All right, so I guess we'll hop off here, and I'll see you next week.
All right, bye, Madison. Bye,
everyone. Have a good week. Bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye.